do art. Oh, I'm chippy. And they go, oh, what do you do? And I'm a farrier. And they go, what is that? So, you'll never win. Trust me, I've had a little Shetland and that's dislocated my shoulder.
But I bet you get to go to some nice places.
Yeah, I've been to some absolute gorgeous places. Like last weekend, I was in Barbados shooting.
Really?
The UK is so regulated. It's the highest standard of farriery in the world. Second or third video, and I had like a million followers within a month, and then it's up to about 4 million.
That is just insane.
And I've got a couple of agents and publicists.
See, that's like, just mental.
It's snowballed into this whole another business, which I had no idea I was getting into. Yeah.
Do you think horse racing is a good thing?
Any sport, the animal, if it's done properly and how it should be done, then it's fine. But what people try and do, they try and cut money. And that's the biggest problem, it's the money side of it.
Right then, let's have a little move on to you then, Sam.
Oh yeah, I'm in trouble now.
So, like we did with Russ, let's sort of try and take it back as far as you're comfortable to. Some people don't want to go too far back. But whether it was a family thing or what, just give us a bit of a breathing and then we can go off it.
So it's a little bit sort of, the traditional way is probably the way you would go about it is, it's a family trade, and then the son comes along, learns to trade, and goes from there. I was a little bit different. I used to ride when I was a kid, horses, competed in a national team for eventing and stuff like that. And I kind of got to the point where I can't play horses anymore. I've got to get myself a proper job. So,
what sort of age was you at this point?
So I probably started riding. Yeah, my mum did carriage driving. I probably started riding about 8.
Doing what? Carriage driving?
Carriage driving. So you have the horse in front of you, a big cart behind you.
And so what was she doing that for? Like,
that was a personal
fun,
really.
Right.
So they have these courses set up, and you basically got to go through this course as quick as you can with the horse and carriage.
I've got visions of Spartacus when you said that.
Yeah, it's kind of the same, but with 4 wheels. Yeah, and that's probably one of the most dangerous activities with horses that you can do.
Right.
Because you've got... Well, you're not sitting on the horse, you're sitting behind it, and you've got a carriage, and you've got someone sitting on the back.
Yeah, you've got that balance.
And you're basically going through these chicanes, but they're all made out of telegraph poles, so they don't move.
Yeah.
So if it goes wrong, it really goes wrong. Yeah. So that's what she did.
So she did that, right, okay.
She had a passion, she loved it. And so from there, I got into horses, just riding. Just started about 8, and then got to, about 15, I started getting into eventing, representing the Southeast national eventing team. And then I realised when I was 19, I've got to get myself a proper job.
Right.
What's eventing, sir?
So that's where you do, your first thing is the dressage, and then you'll do the next thing will be the cross country, which is basically a big course.
A time trial sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, the cross country part, and then you do the show jumping part. So it's all three mainstream disciplines for horses all in one. So then you do them all in one day, or you'd have a 3-day event, that's what they call it, so each day. So I did that, did okay, did my fair share of it. And then, realised I was going to get a proper job. And then I saw the farrier shoeing my horse at the time, and I was like, that looks like a bit of me.
So did you not know at that point where life was going to go?
I was 16, 17, and I sort of had a rough idea. I thought, that's quite cool, but then I thought...
Well, but there was no sort of...
And I thought, well, I might be a plumber.
It was all over the place.
Mainstream stuff, because that's what you think. You're not really open to these things. Yeah. And then I saw that, and I thought, I'd love to get into that. So, because it's involved with horses, my mum was like all over it.
It's instilled in you to a degree.
Let's get this ball rolling. So, I did at the time you do a pre-farrier course. So it's either a 2-year course, depending if you had GCSEs or not, or it goes down to 3 months if you do have your GCSEs. So I was lucky enough to do pretty decent at school and then just got into that 3-month course where they take you through some blacksmithing stuff. So you make like a point out of a square bit of metal, or a rounded point, a bow shackle, a hook. Yeah, it's all this kind of stuff to a certain standard. You get a certificate, and then you've got to find your apprenticeship.
Right.
So I never have ever done a CV in my life. Never done one. It's so old school in my game that you literally just ring these guys up who are accredited training farriers, and you go, can I have a job? And they go,
really?
Turn up, mate. We'll see if you're any good. And we go from there.
So it's literally hands-on then, isn't it? Prove that you can do it.
I turned up, and they were like, right, there's a pair of chaps you can borrow. There's some tools. Take a pair of shoes off. And you're like, okay. So they sort of show you through step by step. Because in the day, it's the animal's welfare. It's predominantly number one. So it's step by step. And then you start doing that for a week. And then they go, okay, I like how you handle the horses because I was always
round them then, weren't you?
So some guys do it from complete scratch.
Yeah.
God knows how they've done it.
Yeah, we wouldn't do that, Russ, would we?
It was tough for me.
No, mate, I'm not horses. Just a quick question there. With the horseshoe, because I've always wondered this, and now you're here, the perfect opportunity to ask. So the horseshoe, because they nail them in, don't they?
Yeah.
What's that go into?
So imagine that foot is basically your middle finger. So the evolution, some guys might disagree, but evolution, your middle finger is that leg.
Yeah.
And then you've got two bones higher up the leg, which are these index finger or whatever, and then you have two other fingers slightly different positions, so it's just the evolution of that,
right?
But essentially what the shoe is nailed into is a giant fingernail,
right?
It's made out of the same stuff,
so they can't feel it.
No, it's no nerve endings.
So you're doing your apprenticeship, you've gone and literally rocked up to your man and he's gone, show me what you can do. So you're how long was you into that then?
I was probably there for about 2 or 3 months, like just working like an absolute slave for nothing. Pure for free. When you're there unloading the van, up.
Yeah, doing all the dog's tools, body work.
Just being a general pain in the ass to them, just in the way. But you are helpful to a certain degree, holding horses and stuff like that. So
you learn, you're observing them, ain't you?
Yeah, you're taking it in. Yeah, what tools next? What's that? So you know the routine, and it just comes naturally. So then, he sort of liked the vibe, and he was like, right, I'll get you an apprenticeship scheme. So that normally takes a long time to get into because it's very niche, and there's only a few places per year. I think it's probably about 30 places per year in the whole country. So I was lucky enough to get someone dropped out and I got straight into that.
Right.
That July straight away. And I was 19 when I started, so I wasn't government granted or half granted. So I had to pay for it while I was earning apprentice wage.
Yeah.
Awful. I don't want to do that experience, trust me, because you're literally like 20 quid left and you're like, right, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
So you do that. So once you start your apprenticeship, you start learning how to do... like make a basic shoe from a scratch, bit of steel, start learning shoes, the variations, making the little point of the clip.
So they teach you that whole process,
so in theory, I could go to a horse, measure its feet, and go, right, I can make a custom shoe out of a straight bit of steel.
Right.
That's essentially what your final exam is, depending on your variations and what they want, stuff like that, to a standard. But nowadays, you just buy the template. You buy a shoe, a standard size, and then you custom make it to the foot.
So
you do 6 months at a time. So it's over 4.5 years, 6 months time. Then you go to, I went to Warwick.
Yeah,
4 weeks of intensive, basically learning about anatomy. They show you how to make certain shoes. You've got to make them to a certain scratch. And then if you pass that block, as they call it, then you can do your next 6 months for your bikes.
Ah, so until you hit the certain criteria. So
they're quite strict, so you only get 2 goes at a single block.
Right.
If you fail 2 times in a row, you're out of the system.
Completely?
Out. I don't know, it might have changed it now, but then it was out.
See, that's quite crazy, considering it's an industry that's quite niche, isn't it?
Yeah,
so you'd think they'd want them.
Training, doesn't it? Yeah. You only get 2 shots at it.
But it's not that hard, as long as you put your work into it.
Yeah.
You have guys who have... very clever, academically, crap hands-on. You have guys who are luckily academically and hands-on, and then some guys who are just can't do the theory.
Yeah.
And they all pass, but it all depends on how much work you put in. Because at the end of the day, these two tutors...
they know if you can do it.
If you don't want to put the effort in, that's your problem, mate.
Because
you want to do the job. We've already got our ticket to do the job. But if you don't want to do it, just go somewhere else.
Is it regulated? Is it a regulated industry? Regulated. Really?
Yeah, hugely regulated. You cannot do anything. I've got to be careful what I say.
Right.
Careful what you do. So if I had a beer at a job and there was, I had my branding on and that's it, I could be struck off.
Wow.
Yeah, disciplinary actions there. They're seriously strong. Yeah. It's very old school, very passionate.
Yeah.
So they got the Worshall Company of Farriers, which are these older guys who keep it traditional. You go to these dinners.
Do you have a secret handshake and all that?
Yeah,
sort?
It's kind of on the verge of that. Like I've been to a few of the dinners. I got invited and I thought, this is like cool, but a little bit sort of not quite my vibe.
I might not make it out tonight.
Yeah. So you're kind of that. And then you've got the Farriers registration, which basically makes sure these guys, you pay for your registration every year. You've got your license. And so you have to pay to be registered.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not covered under insurance, stuff like that. So there's quite a lot of... history.
Tape. Yeah. I suppose they're proud of it, aren't they?
It's been around. It's from, I can't remember when it started, like 40s or 50s it started. where, you know, they used horses in World War One, and then they realised the welfare of the animal came into it, and then it's just been a snowball effect from there till about 10, 15 years ago. It was all done by dissections and how they learn from them. It's only recently with like X-rays, MRIs and stuff like that where you can do it all on live animals. So it's quite interesting. You literally learn everything in those blocks and you work your way up to better and better, then you take your final exam. And that's when the pressure's on. So you've got 2 hours to they give you a random horse.
I was going
to
say, is that hands-on?
Well, it's both. You've got random horse. They go, right, I want this shoe on the front, that shoe on the back, these variations, go. So then they check every stage that you do. And if you under the sort of level in any of those stages, you fail.
Right, okay. I suppose because the welfare, isn't it?
Yes.
It's got to be
number
right.
One is welfare of the horse. The idea of what we do is to increase the working horse's life. So the horse can be doing what it wants to do or what you want it to do for longer. Or you can just leave the horse in the field and we're out of a job. But, you know, that's the whole idea of it. And then you have a 3-hour theory exam. So there's only 5 questions in this exam. And they're like 40 marks per question. And you've got to write.
You've got to nail it.
You've got to write, right.
Excuse the pun.
And you're so bombarded with this theory. Like, if you can't do it, like, I'd be surprised. Most guys pass the theory because it's drummed into you, like, would not believe.
So you've done that and you've passed your exams to get into it. Then where do you go from there? Then you've done your apprenticeship.
So once you're qualified, I think it works out. You're supposed to spend like 3 or 4 months with your boss, so they actually get some decent time out of you.
Yeah,
they can send you out.
Well, that's a massive thing. Is a lot of people do their apprenticeships, get qualified, and go.
Yeah, it's a huge issue though. Yeah, isn't it?
Through everywhere, and it's nice that you've said that. You do your time, you get your ticket, and you spend, I think, you know, you should at least do a year or so.
Yeah, I agree.
Paying back what they put into you.
I stayed with my boss for a year.
Right.
Afterwards, purely because I cut down my days. Yeah, didn't have enough lads, and then he had enough lads, and then in the end I was sitting around like, there's no point in me being here because I'm just sitting around.
Right.
But I still talk to my boss, stuff like that. A lot of lads are a little bit unlucky, and I do get guys that just rinse them.
Mm.
Yeah, they do all the heavy lifting, which, you know, part of the game. You do your 4.5 years of slavery and then that's it. You get your ticket and then you're there. But yeah, you learn all the way through under your boss and then you get your ticket and then that's it. And you're in a big world. And that's when you really learn. Because then you've got to deal with the customers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got to deal with the horses. And when you first start, you get some wild horses.
So is it an industry that you've done your year with your former boss? Are you then straight into setting your own business up?
Yeah, so once you've got your ticket, in theory, that's it. You're on your own.
Right.
I suppose
there's not many farrier businesses. Am I right?
I
could go to your local town and there's 10 paints and decorators, 10 plumbing firms. It's not...
You'd be surprised.
Right, really?
So there's 3,000 farriers.
Right.
And we have, you know, an area that we cover. And I must know 20 different farriers in my area. So that we're about, but it's quite horsey. Yeah, dense where we are. But yeah, there's a lot of guys. Well, I always think there's a lot of guys out there. But because I'm in the trade, I see the guys. But you guys would probably like, I've never seen a farrier.
Yeah, I see. If I'm local to Warwick, and obviously you said we've got the college here, so you do see quite a few around here. And I live directly over the road from a race course, and you've got like a polo ground up the road. So it's quite.
You'll see them coming in and out.
Yeah. You see them about, but, you know.
Just not as mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah, you talk to guys. Like I used to go to...
Very rarely you'll go to the pub and you'll go, here's a plumber, there's a chippy, there's a farrier.
But most of the time you get, what do you do? Oh, I'm a chippy. And they go, oh, what do you do? And I'm a farrier. And they go, what is that?
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, I shoe horses. And they go, what, shoot? No, I don't shoot them, I shoe them. So, you know, and then they're like, oh, I don't get it. And you say blacksmith. And they go, oh, okay. Because blacksmith, I don't know, seem to be more mainstream because we used to do both.
Mm.
But now it's completely different.
It's split.
Completely different, yeah. Same kind of hammer and tongs skills-ish. One's, what I say, more artistic. One's more sort of veterinary side, which is the farrier. So, you just go off on your own. You hit the ground running, and you take on anything and everything because you've lasted on literally apprentice wage.
yeah.
You've got to make your money. Get some money out and buy a van, and you've got some clapped-up old piece of crap that can just about take you up the hill. But then you bought tools. And then you're taking on anything and everything. And you get people that have had horses and done no training with them. And they're like, oh, can I set shoes? You know,
so you've got to go to a horse that's just wild.
Yeah, in theory, and you're like, there's two ways to go about it. If you know, nowadays we've got vets that come in and they can state them. But back in the old day, there used to be slight techniques which would not be accepted as today.
Right. Okay.
Very old school. They're effective.
They work.
But you wouldn't use them today. Yeah. Because
would you be booted straight out if you used?
Yeah. If you got caught, because everyone's got cameras now. If you got caught doing that, then your license is pretty much finished. Yeah.
Where does the shoeing take place? Like, because I've got in my mind, you know, you see them like rodeo or riding bull things where they put them in like a metal cage and you grab the feet. No, you're not like in the middle of a field trying to.
Oh, I've done that.
Really?
I've been in the middle of a field, deep mud like that. You know, it's like, you know, imagine, yeah, you're a plumber and then like people just got shit everywhere and stuff like that, and it's just full of crap and clothes, and they're like, "Right, can you fix it?" And you're like,
"Yeah,
really?"
Yeah.
But if it's nice and clean, and it's like nice, dry, and it's painted, like fresh, you're like, "Oh, nice job, this."
Yeah,
having a cup of tea or something like that goes a long way.
Yeah.
So most of the time now, I've got a good set of clients. It's on a nice concrete yard. You might be in a barn. They give you a cup of tea, and it's you can make a really nice job.
Mm.
But if you're turning up and it's an absolute junkyard, and you're like, "How am I supposed to do a champagne job?"
Yeah.
With just shit.
But that touches back to exactly what you said. You do years of shit, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You cut your teeth on the shit in the middle of the field, you know, on a frozen morning or whatever, and now X amount of years into it,
you siphon it through and you keep your good ones.
Yeah, so
I've had customers from when I've started, 12 years down the line, but I've had customers go to once and you go, "Oh, I'm never going back there again."
Yeah.
You do, though, like you just said there, Mark, I think you do get to that point, don't you, like I do it, where not that I'll just say it as it is. I am selective.
Yeah.
So if I get certain jobs come in, I will look and think, no, that's not for me.
Yeah.
But when you are starting out, it's like, I'll do that.
You want to take everything, don't you?
You need the money.
Yeah, of course you do. Like you say, you've spent years scraping a living.
Mm.
Then all of a sudden, you don't want to turn anything away because you've got your own business set up, your van, you've got this, that, and the other. So, yeah. So you're running with it. You've set your business up and it's going all right.
I was lucky enough, you know, I was already in horses, so I had a few people.
So you got the connections.
So it's
already.
Very word of mouth. You don't do car, well, people do car dropping, but people just throw them out. And
how long would it take to shoe up, just one shoe, for instance?
So 1 foot, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Right, okay. Yeah. So is it straightforward is wrong because it's playing down what you do.
It's one of those jobs. It's not a job
that couldn't take. Could it take an hour? Is there anything that you could do?
A whole horse. If I did 4 feet, it'd take me 45 minutes.
But if you was, is there anything with one leg? I don't really know the terminology. One shoe.
Foot. Yeah.
Yeah. 1 foot. Yeah. Well, it's just a fucking foot mark, isn't it? 1 foot. Is there anything that could be drastically wrong that would take an hour to do?
Yeah. So, like, let's go back to the whole sort of training thing. You learn about everything within the leg. How bones are formed, tendons, ligaments, where the bones are attached, movement of the foot. You learn a perfect leg.
Right.
And then from there, you learn of all the deformities that could happen. I can say terminology is side bone, ring bone, which is basically arthritis. You've got tendon problems, foot angle problems. You've got legs being shorter than the other. You could have, I'll say medial lateral, but inside and outside, imbalances. And you've got to learn different variations of shoes to make that foot better.
So it's the shoe that would make that better, not how you cut it.
So trim's number one.
Right.
So your trim and how you lever the foot up, and then the shoe will support it. So you don't fix things, which is it's completely wrong. When you hear anybody with horses say, "I'm going to fix this," they're talking absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
You're there to maintain and prevent it getting worse. So say if I got a bad knee, you would put like a remedial shoe on which will help your knee in certain actions. So it's the same thing, but it's custom fitted to the horse, so you need to learn how the horses walk, what discipline they're in, because different shoes with different disciplines, different breeds, different environments,
what the ground they're on.
Environment's a big one. Obviously even being a stallion is different to a mare or a girl, whatever you want to call it. There's a whole range of aspects that you have to take in that people don't realise.
Spend a while assessing that horse.
Yeah, so it comes naturally. So when you turn up the job, you're instantly going, right, that's the field that's going in, which is this deep in mud, so I can't leave the shoes supporting too much because otherwise the horse pulls it off.
Right.
So then then the owner's like, oh yeah, I'm going out show jumping. You pick up the foot and this shoe's like brand new. It's not been ridden. And yeah, all kinds of
stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. There's telltale signs.
So, yeah, so that comes with experience.
So like I say, I ain't got a clue about any of this. Yeah. So I'm learning on the job here. So you're talking about talking about trimming the nail, as it were. Because I'm just thinking like fingernail now. So you stick the shoe on the end of the fingernail.
Yeah.
How long does that last then before the nail grows and you have to... Is that what you do? So the nail grows, you take it off, cut the nail, put a new one up.
Yeah, so it's either nail... Well, it's either foot growth, as we call it, or hoof growth, whatever, or shoe wear. So obviously if you're riding a horse a lot, the shoes get absolutely spanked and then you put new ones on.
Mm.
Or if the foot's growing a lot, then obviously you're re-trimming the foot to reset it because basically as the foot grows, it pushes the shoe forward.
Okay.
So then... I need a diagram, really. Then it puts stress putting more
weight on the back of it, isn't it?
It is literally as simple as that. It's quite a lot of it's logic, but then sometimes you want to spin your logic for certain things.
Yeah.
That's where experience comes in. But you try and tell owners that horses need to be maintained rather than fixed.
Yeah.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Prevention before cure, isn't it?
Yeah. So they're spending money every 6 weeks or 4 weeks or what? Yeah, depending on what job they're in. So the polo ponies you do every 4 weeks because you want them nice and short and agile. Most of your general riding stuff is 6 to 8 weeks.
That's quite regular. So when because we're talking about your demographic of client.
Yeah.
So once you get like a good one, that a customer that you're going back to every six to eight weeks,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So the idea is we can get the feet as good quality as we can. Makes our job easier. So it's our own best interest to make the feet as good as we can.
So it's the first time you go, you've got to sort out a load of shit. Then you maintain it because you know you're the guy. You're the guy going back.
But like, I don't want to be upsetting any other farriers. Some customers that just leave the horses too long.
Yeah.
And then what you got to do is you got to take a lot of foot off to get them to reset. Mm. But then the problem is if it's too much of a change, the horse doesn't like it because it's too much in one hit.
Right.
So you're trying to understand to people that you can't leave them too long because they leave them too long. Then you take a lot off, and then it goes a little bit sore. And then they leave it. So after a week, it's all right. So then they're like, well, I'll leave it longer.
I've got a week's leave.
Because otherwise, every time I shoe it, it goes sore for a week. Well, no, if you shot it every 5 weeks instead of every 9 weeks, you wouldn't have that week of problem.
Yeah. It's an industry, by the sounds of it, that you'll have that rolling circuit that you do.
Yeah, for repeating customers, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, I've won some, lost some, but as long as you're winning some more than you're losing then you're all right. But you can go to a job, have a lovely horse, perfect, but the customer doesn't like you,
You know, people buy people, don't they?
And you take it to heart because you spend so long training, you do a perfect job, and then the customer goes, I don't want you here next time. And you're like, why? And you never know why. And you just, in the end, you just go, whatever, I don't care.
Ladies and gents, just a quick one to say a huge thank you to our new headline sponsor, CT1, the best sealant on the market, voted for by the British public. Not only that, it's made in Britain as well. So go and support a product and a brand that is made in the UK. But I just want to say to you, they've got a brand new product out, which is the BT1. It's a combination sealant and adhesive, like the popular CT1, but it's perfect for keeping a hygienic environment. And it's designed to completely stop the growth of bacteria, microbes, and fungus. And not only that, this stuff is strong. Now, it's going to be available at Travis Perkins, Wicks, Juicens, and pretty much everywhere else, so there's no excuse not to go and give it a go. So we're really happy to be partnering with CT1.
You've built your business then, and you work on your own, don't you? You've got people
So I used to have a couple of guys help me out and stuff like that, but now I've done 14 years of going hammer and tongs, doing as many horses as I can, polo.
Is that where that comes from?
Yeah.
That saying?
Yeah, hammer and tongs.
People go hammer and tongs at a job, don't
people say to me, that's where it is. Every day,
I hadn't even thought of it, but when you said it then, I was like, is that...
Yeah, the hammer and tongs, you just smash it away.
Yeah, so that is from that industry.
Yeah, I've done...
There you go.
Yeah,
there we go. If you take one thing, Russell, from the podcast...
Take that away with me today.
We're all learning something, aren't we?
Absolutely.
But I've done polo ponies. I've done 30, 40 polo ponies in a day. I've done eventers, big horses, little horses, and it's one of those industries, probably like many other trades. It's how hard you want to work, it's how much money you earn.
Yeah.
And I've got to the point where I can barely stand up. My knees are busted.
Yeah, but it's physical, isn't it?
It's labour intensive.
Yeah.
you know, the actual overheads are fairly minimal.
Yeah.
But you're paying for the skill.
Yeah. It's time, isn't it? You're paying for them.
I guess you are like bent over a lot, aren't you? With the
you're in a vulnerable position where you're weak naturally, but then the horses move and they jump and they pull you around. So
you've got to be proper physically strong as well, haven't you? Or do you?
It's a bit of both.
Do you hold that?
It's technique a lot.
Right. Okay. You know, as opposed to brute force.
You look at a lot of farriers. Yeah. Okay. You do get some big guys, and I don't know how they do it, but most of us are pretty skinny. You don't get really like hench. As you can, but not many.
How do you struggle with a big guy doing it?
Makes you less agile.
Right, okay.
You know, you've got to work with the horse rather than try and fight the horse, because you'll never win.
Yeah.
You know, horse's ass is like that, and our biggest muscle is probably about that.
Yeah.
So regardless of how strong you are, I don't care if you've been down a gym forever.
Yeah.
You're never going to hold
so the horse. I suppose the bigger you are, the more...
You're just a little bit slower.
That's why you stay away from horses. That's why you stay away from gyms.
There's no point. I can't wrestle a horse.
Yeah, you'll never win. Trust me. I've had a little Shetland, and that's dislocated my shoulder. That's the worst injury I've had out of horses.
How long was you off for?
I carried on working, but I was like this. Because you've got to go every 6 weeks. Otherwise, people just go to get
someone else. They'll find someone else. And as soon as they find someone else, chances are.
Yeah. So loyalty in the game has changed a lot.
Is it quite a glamorous job?
No.
Is it not? Yeah. Do you never...
People think it is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, look at this guy. He's got his chaps on, shirt off. Yeah, bent over, fucking flicking shit out of your pulled around, smashing my fingers, burned, singed, whatever. Yeah. Yeah,
to go to some nice places.
Yeah, I've been to some absolute gorgeous places to absolute dive. Last weekend, I was in Barbados shooting.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going out to Barbados. So this is a job.
So what tool? Can you take your tools out there?
No, so they actually had their own tools there, which I'm sure, like, you know, dealing in your trades, you have your tools, which are basically an extension of your arm.
Yeah.
You know, you might have the same brand, two different guys, same brand of tools, but they're completely different.
Yeah.
You swap them over, everyone's a bit like,
oh, we're just saying,
I can use it, but it's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. You find a certain way.
And then, like, you could use a type of brush on there, how long it lasts, but say you used it for a year and another guy had the same brand, used that for a year, and you swap brushes, you'll be like, this is a different brush.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the same thing. Yeah, and you know, people buy these tools and you're a bit like, well, hang on a minute, a bit backward, but you can just still do the job. Yeah, you can still do it fine.
How was it getting flown out? There's a reason I ask this, but how was it working in Barbados? Did they just fly you out to do the job and then...
Yeah, it was a group of them and they just sort of all chipped in for the airfare and stuff like that, because... The UK is so regulated. The training's to a such high standard. It's the highest standard of farriery in the world.
Really?
Yeah. So I think New Zealand have a similar course and a similar apprenticeship stuff like that, but it's not deemed as the same qualification. So as soon as I got my ticket, you are literally a ticket to anywhere in the world.
Right. You're in demand.
You're above like doctor and points and stuff like that. Brilliant. So I knew a couple of guys who were slightly older than me when they qualified. They're just like that, Australia. Bang, off they went.
Did you get any like downtime while you were there? Or
A little bit, yeah. I didn't do a crazy amount.
The reason I got asked to do, it might have been Barbados actually. I had an interior designer ask me to go and paint three villas in Barbados. I turned down the job because it was just labour in the burning hot.
Yeah.
You know, because when I actually got down to it.
Yeah. I did it for the experience, really.
Yeah. It's just to tick it off and a story, isn't it?
Well, they wanted to tell the story now, so it's quite good.
Not that I'm posh, but they wanted to fly me economy, which is normal. But I'm thinking, well, if you're flying me out there. So they wanted to fly me economy and then stick me in a really cheap hotel to basically work 7 days straight and then go home.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I can do that. I can do that in Bromsgrove, mate. Yeah. I don't need to do that in Barbados.
I had 4 days there, but I only worked for a day. Yeah. So then I had 3 days myself.
That's okay.
Well, we had some lads, we did a podcast last week with the Gafflow Floor lads. So they went out to Ibiza. I didn't pick up on it, did I? They went out to Ibiza to do some resin flooring. I think they said the job took, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. They were there 4 months partying.
Yeah.
And I missed it. Ollie said about it, and I was like, did they say they were there for 4 months? I was like, brilliant. So if you get them opportunities, you've got to run with them.
Like, obviously, you can look at it financially, or you can just look at it as an experience. I did enjoy it. It was good fun. You know, I obviously earned a few quid while I was there, but you know, it was all free, really.
Yeah. You've got a few days. I mean, to be honest, if I'd have been floated that, if they'd have said, look, we want you to work 7 days, we'll give you 3 days, but it was literally start this day, go home that day, work all the way through.
It's a bit, it's no...
There's no incentive to do, is it?
To go.
No,
it's a bit,
so not for me.
Like, what's the point? Yeah, if they said to me, right, you're going to fly in this day, you're going to do God knows how many horses, and then you're flying home, I'd probably have been like, well, you have to pay me some serious money to make it work.
Definitely.
But yeah, swings and roundabouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you say, you can have a ticket to anywhere in the world if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah, if you're good at your trade and that.
Is it, say Barbados, there's, and just America and stuff like that, the training is either zero or very little.
Right.
You know, and a lot of stuff on the social that I've done, a lot of guys are just learning the basics in like India and stuff like that, where they're still using horses for their day-to-day stuff. So they want to know how to basically look after the horse best they can to keep the horse going. Because if they lose the horse, that's it. The form of transport, work, plowing, whatever, they can't do.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. I'd have assumed America would have been quite high up.
I was going
to
say that. I just went to Texas. They've got a massive I assume there's a massive horse thing there.
Yeah, it's right up there, but they've got some sort of legalisation on what you can and can't do. Where out in those sort of places, they just don't
do what they want.
Literally, if you fancied having a go, you can have a go. You know,
I ain't going nowhere near a horse, trust me.
But it's messy.
Yeah,
you know, when you see stuff like that, and you think.
So you've built your business and it's going well, and then there's come a point with what you do. You've obviously picked a camera up at some point.
Yeah,
and you've gone, I'm just going to film this and see, or film it and put it out there socially.
Yeah.
So what sort of happened there, Sam?
it was a bit of a weird one, but like it's. The same sort of pub scenario, like you say what you do for a job, and people go, what the hell's that?
So before we go on, is it worth putting a context to this? Is it worth, while we're leading into the socials, is it worth saying the number side of it now?
Well, let Sam tell everyone.
Okay.
We'll just fly into it.
This is why, whenever we do the podcast, we have a chat beforehand. We was chatting with Russell beforehand. And then when you turned up, I specifically didn't go into this because I wanted it to be pretty raw. I wanted it to be raw because I wanted to hear how this happened. You've gone, right, let's pick up.
So I get the question, what is a farrier? And then I get people like, you know, predominantly it's full of women doing the horses, but there are guys out there. But you get their friends turn up at a yard and you're doing your job and they go, oh my God, I've never seen that. What is that? How does that work? So you get so many questions, and they're basic. They're not, you know, talking about deep flexor tendons and pedal bones and stuff like that. It's not crazy stuff. It's all basic. So I was like, well, let's just whack a video up and try and educate people a little bit, just to bridge that gap. Because I think the general public, there's a gap now from what I do to what they understand is huge.
Save it
it's
to
absolutely
be.
Absolutely huge, to the point where you think, are people actually asking these questions?
Do they not know anything?
They go, does it hurt? Which is what you just said. And you're like, logically.
Yeah. But people not around it, that's why.
Yeah. It looks like, oh my God, you're putting nails in horses' feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks terrible. But yeah,
that was my thought process.
Yeah. But it's answering those questions.
Yeah.
So you was like, right.
Yeah. So I was like, right, put it up. And then it literally, my phone.
Had you done any social stuff before that?
No.
Nothing. Are you tech savvy?
I'm hammering tongs.
Right.
So you're not
techie,
really.
Okay. What about you?
I've helped.
Was you sort of instrument in it or not?
It
just took off.
It was like sort of end of lockdown. We were like, she just put one up.
Right.
So yeah, it took off. And then I think within a month, I had 1 million followers on TikTok.
So you put it up. So you just filmed it on your phone?
Yeah, because it's raw footage, it's 100% raw. So, because I can't stop having a go, it's literally me doing the job, and we just put it up.
So, just set up a TikTok account, and then I'm just going
to
put.
I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get a pony into my studio to get some.
Oh, I'm going
to
start.
But
so, you've just uploaded it from scratch.
From scratch, and literally, it's like second or third video, and I had like 1 million followers within a month. And then it's up to about 4 million on that at the minute. And then on my first year...
That is just insane.
Yeah. On my first year of TikTok, I was the 10th most viewed video in the UK.
So what year did you start it then?
2021.
Right, so your first year, you put that video out, it's gone.
Third video has got 198 million views.
Jesus.
It's just me just picking a foot up, doing my job. Yeah, but it's so unusual to to the general public.
You can't even comprehend that many.
I'll get it's worse.
198 million. How many people are in the UK?
Oh, somebody worked it out for me. It was hours.
Oh, it goes. It goes crazy.
Yeah, so
you've
bigger than that.
So you've listen to this.
Yeah, it's more exciting.
Just strap me in.
Just because
I still struggle to get over
with what we do here. It is obviously we get told quite a lot sometimes that we concentrate on the social media side of the trades quite a lot, and we've sort of moved away from it, but tried to expand a bit more. But when we knew you was coming on, we was like,
you can't get your head around it.
The numbers are just mind blowing, especially the growth.
How quickly it went. My phone, I just turn it off.
Did you sort of go, what's going on?
Like this, and I'm trying to shoe horses, and their legs going, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, take this off me.
Was you like, what am I doing?
What's going on?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so, let's say, carried on with that. And then the second year, I had to put, doing videos, and they were doing very well. I'm terrible at the consistency, but it's like,
I don't think you need to be when you chuck one out and it does.
Yeah, well, I've got a few videos, and then it's like, I've just kept doing the same thing, so I keep doing quite well. So.
And the video was just you shaving?
Yeah, just doing that. Just taking the shoe off, trimming the foot. That's pretty much it. Most of them are like that.
The 10-minute, not a 10-minute job.
Well, it's down to
the simpleness. What would have been a 10-minute job of taking the shoe off, trimming it down,
making condensed the shoe and then put it on and stuff like that. So it's usually just the trimming bit. People.
What is it that you? What's the
satisfying one?
No, there's that. What's it called?
ASMR.
ASMR.
Isn't that noise or is that visual?
No, it's like noise and visual. I think it's both.
But it's something that
satisfying.
Like there's loads of these random things, aren't there? Like at the minute, there's a guy pushing a bottle. A bottle of Coke down a stairwell with a thing at the bottom with a load of spikes, and this bottle of Coke just rolls down. I'm like that, like a fucking zombie
It's huge.
And then I go, fucking hell, Mark, have a word with yourself. You're watching some prick push a bottle down a fucking stairwell.
This is at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m. Piss hanging out your arse going, this is fucking great.
I've got to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
I saw one the other day, they were just throwing loads of bottles. Well, not throwing them, but like, say, rolling different bottles to see where they smash.
That's stupid, but watching that, there's some structure in it.
Yeah, it's the unknown. So everyone knows what bottle looks like. But you can't help because of the noise. But this is like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And it's a blend of both. So
that's exactly it, though, isn't it? The average person. I mean, I'm sat here going, well, does that hurt the horse?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Does it actually hurt?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But like the average person don't know. Yeah. So you're putting out there.
To me, like, because obviously day in day out, I'm like, that's the most stupid question I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
But to the general public, that is the most asked question I get.
Does it hurt?
And you just think, well, but now, like, after a while, you get this sort of fan club of horsey people. And they just attack you guys. They're like, that's a stupid question. You know, they're doing the question.
So you're just
giving the
people what they want.
Yeah, giving them the ammo.
Yeah, yeah.
And off they go. But yeah, so that was 2021, top 10. 2022, I got the most watched video. Most watched video.
The most watched TikTok video in the UK.
Yeah, which was 325 million views. Yeah.
out of anybody, you've got your celebs and you've got. Yeah, they're paid to put endorsements out. And
that's the same same thing, different horse, different yard, but essentially the same sort of video. And that just took off, So I think I was the only person who did it twice in a row in the top 10. And then 2023, I had the second most viewed video. I think that was 300 million, I can't remember.
I would have it as my screensaver. I'm afraid it would be the listed.
198.
I was 198, so it was not quite as well.
So combined,
that's mad.
The views.
Probably
billions.
The whole thing, billions, but
billion.
I think I've done fairly well on YouTube as well. That went to like.
Yeah, so I had a look at you. So interestingly, we've done that, and I've looked on your YouTube, and
random.
Very. Very random. Now, I've got a YouTube channel. You don't do much on socials, do you?
Mate, I'm like a dinosaur. Yeah. To be fair, since starting the podcast, which is only 7 weeks ago, I've put it on everything. So we're on all the social channels.
So you're on that learning curve.
Yeah. I mean, the decorating. So RDP Paints and Decorators, which has been my bread and butter, I think, on Instagram I've always used, but it's just a portfolio. So I've got just under 5,000 followers. Yeah, so, nice. Say that very quietly in present company.
It's a hard work. I've been lucky enough to have the right job, right place, the right time to boost it.
Yeah.
And it just so happened to be lucky to do that. But a lot of the, normal guys, but like the normal mainstream jobs, to get that sort of numbers.
Yeah, the peasants.
It's good. I'm just so unique.
Remember getting 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.
And it's hard.
So like, so me, my sort of social side is predominantly YouTube, with my plumbing YouTube channel. That if you're watching this with Sam, go on to MJ Tiff Plumbing the Heat, and I'm going to just backpedal off a load of your followers. So it's took me 3 years to get to sort of 30,000, 35,000 subscribers. Massive achievement. I think every achievement you get within...
Yeah, it's huge.
It's great.
It's huge, yeah.
So my go-to, after seeing your TikTok stuff, was like, well, does he do much on YouTube? Clicked on YouTube. The first thing I'm hit by is subscribers, 2.6 million subscribers.
Yeah, I think it's, yes.
But, interestingly, I then looked and you don't put many videos out.
No, not much long form. No.
Not much long form content. It's your TikTok shorts that have done that.
Yeah, I think one of those videos is like 500 million views or something.
On YouTube?
Yeah, the shorts.
Doing the same thing?
So it's a similar thing, yeah. But the long form, I'm terrible on camera.
Yeah.
And I'm getting better, terribly better. But yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Slowly. But yeah, to do a long form, I'll just...
See, long form's...
The problem is I don't want to teach people how to do the job because then people have a go at it and then it's just car crash. So I can do a slower version of what I'm doing, do all 4 feet and stuff like that. But like people just like the short snips of it and they go, oh, okay, I've learned something a bit different.
But it's crazy that your YouTube has hit them number subscribers from the short form content, whereas the long form stuff, you're still great numbers, but I was... clicked on it and went, oh, and then went, hang on, clicked the shorts and went, right, okay.
Yeah, shorts just went mad. Yeah, so half a billion views, yeah.
So to sort of get into the realms of the most viewed video in TikTok, what happens with the phone and the email?
So it's, like people don't understand, like obviously you're doing the socials, most people are on their own doing this stuff and they're finding their spare time to do it. I do a full-time job, so I still do my shoeing Farry full time. Yeah, that's what I do. I have my other half who manages it for me now because I just can't keep up.
You manage the social side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's got that, and I've got a couple of agents and publicists, and now
just mental.
It's snowballed into this whole another business which I had no idea I was getting into, and now I've stepped into it, and I'm like, right, I can't physically do this. So I've got group chats coming out of my ears, and I'm just not the best on my phone unless it's a customer that I got to deal with.
Yeah,
because I'm reading these group chats, and everyone's like, "Oh, he doesn't say much in these group chats." I can't keep up.
Yeah.
So I managed to get the gist of what's going on and stuff like that. So yeah, it's opened up some really cool opportunities work-wise.
I was going to say, probably
not boosted me a lot because it's so niche.
Yeah,
like I've had people going, "Oh, where are you in? Because I'm in Kentucky." I'm like, no, I'm not in Kentucky. So you get a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, I've had some really wicked opportunities.
I bet you've had some off the back of doing that. I see that you was like the TikTok awards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you've had a night out there. I bet that's eye-opening.
A couple of years went to the TikTok parties. They are
because you get very... the celebs that are craving that high number.
Yeah.
So they're doing everything they can. Yeah. To get anywhere near, and then zero disrespect for the comment I'm going to make next.
Go for it. I've probably had worse.
Yeah, no, don't use that. The Farrier is number one.
Yeah.
You know, you've got these proper celeb, these fame hungry people.
Desperate for it, yeah.
And Sam rolls in.
Like, all right.
Yeah. What do you music? Film.
So was that what it was like at those awards? Like you'd got all these celebs and pseudo celebs and all that?
Like people in the weirdest things, like guy that does like lawnmowers, and then a guy that does DJ, and then you might have some I don't know, like grows bonsai trees.
So
you have like the weirdest.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy.
And then like
that's kind of cool though, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. You realise actually, I am niche. well, that's really niche. But they don't think, they think the same
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you're just full of a load of niche people.
Yeah, and you think, oh, I must, I, you know, if you're out there, you have like the, I've got the weirdest job, no one ever does this. But if you put it up there, you're not actually that out there with the weirdest stuff. Mm. And like, I've met a few guys through TikTok, which who I talk to a lot now.
Farrier guys or
not farriers, right. But like, you know,
you've become good mates with them because they're
in a similar sort of scenario. They're like, yeah, I'll text them, going, what do you do at a minute? Like, how are you doing with this scenario and how are you doing that scenario? So,
I don't don't name whoever, but what sort of industry are they?
One guy I've talked to quite a lot is he does swimming pools,
right? Okay,
he just cleans swimming pools.
See, and he's one of the top,
I do okay, he's much bigger than I am
from just again. It's not just cleaning. What we see is quite normal.
Yeah.
You know, there's a guy that I watch on YouTube, and he, again, I thought he was going to say the same guy. He finds leaks in swimming pools. So people will employ him, and he puts like a dye in, and it will be tracing around this pool, and then all of a sudden you'll see it get sucked in, and I'm like...
So you're not that unusual. You think you're unusual, but you're not.
Yeah.
So and it's weird. It's just weird how it takes.
Isn't it brilliant now, though, that like... the public can vote with their feet. Do you know what I mean? Like, anybody can put anything on these social channels, and now it's just up to the public to go, I want to watch that. Yeah, that interests me. And a lot of the time, it sees, like, what people in various trades would consider day-to-day things, that if you're not in the trade, you know, it's rocket science, isn't it? It's like, I've never seen that.
Yeah, we were at school 16, a lot of people are, oh, what do you want to do? And all you think about is your mainstream trades, because that's what you see all the time.
Because what's drummed into you,
with a lot of the socials and stuff like that, especially when you're flicking through videos, you're like, well, that's a bit different. I'll give that a go.
Yeah.
So I think it's opened the opportunities to a lot of people for the unusual jobs. So it's good to keep them alive.
Yeah, yeah.
In my trade, normally people who get into it are either involved in horses or have had horses, or that's a family trait. That is it. That's how it used to be. It used to be just family.
Right.
You know, dad trains a son, and that's how it went. But now you're getting guys coming from all kinds of angles, because I'm getting asked, how do you get into this? How do you do it? I love this.
Do you think they want to get into it because they've seen what you've got socially? Or
I think some people do.
Are you glad it's opened people's eyes up more to what you do?
Yeah, the main reason that I think about it is it's people are understanding that aspect of what we do for horses. It's the education of what we do, and why we're there, part of a team with the rider, physio, vets. So we're there, so people obviously know what vets are, physios are, but then farriers, just like, we're such an important part of the
unsung
game.
Heroes.
Yeah, well, they say no foot, no horse.
Well, that's right. At the end, like it goes to like a soldier march on his feet. You're always protecting the feet, weren't you, in war? Always. And like, I'm going to say it again, putting it back to cars, the tires, the feet of a car are what keeps
that's what sticks you to the ground.
Everything. That moment that whatever it is touches the floor, that's your key point. Oh,
there is like a long saying that you can.
A tyre is the foot of the car. You love it. That's about the fifth time tonight I've got it in there.
There is a saying, but I can't remember how it went. But it's like, if the nail is lost, I can't remember how it goes, then the shoe comes off, then the horse is unable to canter, then the message doesn't get to the other end. That means 10,000 guys have died. That's not exactly how it went, but that's how it goes. So it shows you how important that we are there for the animals.
When did it become horses having the shoes on them?
So that idea came from probably pre-Roman times.
Oh, is it? It's that far
when
back?
When roads came, well, people started using horses more than what they naturally meant to do in the wild, I suppose.
Just on that point, sorry to interrupt, Sam, but like in the wild, say if you just left a horse in a field, because they wouldn't have opportunity to have their nails trimmed, so what would happen?
So this is like a whole other huge subject, but I'll try and slim it down as far as I can. Horses are naturally selectively bred now. So you've got different breeds, but they're all in the wrong places, and they've all been crossbred and stuff like that. So you've got like a pony and there's a Shetland pony who's supposed to live up in Shetland because it's seriously windy, there's no food, and they survive on hardly anything. And then you've got a thoroughbred, which is a highly strung, athletic horse, which needs a lot of food all the time, but also needs exercise because of its brain. So when you've got like horses in like America, out in the massive wild there. They actually walk on tracks and they keep their feet down. They wear like them natural on sand.
Similar to like when you walk a dog on the road.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. So they're self-sufficient and different environments wear the feet differently. Where in the UK especially, we've got these lovely green fields. People think, oh, chuck a horse out there. It'd be perfect. Well, that is like literally putting...
It's the worst thing.
A big kid in a sweet shop.
Right.
They don't have to move. They don't have to forage. They're just eating this lush green grass. They're supposed to basically forage through woods and pick at everything.
Yeah.
They're supposed to eat all day long, basically.
Whereas now they just
the wrong type of horses in lush grass. And it's, people just think, oh, feed. And you say, no. And they think we're being cruel. But it's not their natural, how their body works.
And what about like the racehorse? Is that a completely different shoe?
Yeah, so you have a race plate. So you have a training plate, an aluminium plate, which is, or an actual proper race plate. So they're the two basic shoes. You can go into a whole world of other stuff, but your training plate is a steel light shoe, and that's for your everyday gallops training. And then the race day, you put an aluminium shoe on for the race because they're lighter.
Right.
That's pretty much
it. Do you do much with race horses?
I've done a bit. Yeah, I've done a bit.
Have you not got like a specific niche that you're...
Mine was polo.
Right, okay.
A lot easier. The horses are like robots. They literally tie them all up and you just go along and you just see all the horses. With racing, you're going in and out of stalls with 2-3-year-olds. So it's a little bit feisty.
Yeah.
But I'm far too fragile for that.
You've done your years.
I've done my time.
Fighting
them. But polo's got its own hazards. You know, you get one horse spooks and then the whole lot go. And I've seen all kinds of horrific accidents. Really? Horses flipping over.
Those race horses, some of those are worth like mega dough, aren't they?
It's money, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of money in it, but the problem is like that's the bit that you see. I see thousands of horses being bred, and about 2 or 3 bit make it to
make
the top, and the rest of them are worthless.
Do you think horse racing is a good thing?
Yeah, it is. If it's done properly, any sport with animals, if it's done properly and how it should be done, then it's fine.
Right.
But what people try and do, they try and cut money. And that's the biggest problem. It's the money side of it. You know, there's too much greed.
Especially in that, because it's very lucrative, isn't it?
Yeah, if people looked after the horses and then, the horses that are not quick enough, they rehome them or rehabilitate them to be something else, like show jumping or dressage or whatever, or just a horse to ride, then that's fine. But a lot of them, they just chuck them away.
When they're no longer bringing the money in or whatever.
Yeah, it's the money side of it. And it's there are programs, I think it's called the R&R or something. I can't remember. They rehabilitate these racehorses. And that's getting bigger and bigger and more of a snowball effect with it.
Right.
Because people are realising all these horses are just going to waste.
Are you wasting time? I think that some of you probably are, and I have a solution for you. Nobody wants to do any type of admin. Now, I have a solution for you, and it is called Tradeify. It's a fully automated job scheduling, invoicing, and quoting all in one place. Now, that software is going to save you 12 hours a week, and all by using a simple software solution. Now, you can try it for 2 weeks absolutely free, no cards needed, and you'll even get support in person from Tradeify themselves. Now, when you're done, you can always come back to me and thank me, but just enjoy the extra 12 hours that you're going to gain from just using the software.
So what's the future plans for your business then? Are you going to keep growing the socials? Are you going to keep growing the business? What's sort of taking...
So I've slowed down on work. So I just do my normal... I do like 5 or 6 a day. It's a nice day out.
Yeah.
Customers that I like doing. And the socials, I am just riding the wave, just trying to educate people.
Yeah.
You know, the more people I can educate, the better the welfare of the horse, the better farriers are looked after. Yeah, I did a lot with the pony club and stuff like that to try and educate the younger generation to make them grow and be better.
So that's sort of, like you say, you can pick and choose your work, day-to-day work.
Yeah.
And the rest of it.
Yeah, I just plod along now. I've done my...
It's nice. It's a nice...
It's nice feeling.
You know, even to the, not to the degree of yours, but with mine, I can now, it's two separate businesses, the plumbing and the social side of stuff. You know, when you get companies working with you and that, you can now begin to pick a job. Because what I've obviously filled my day... I will look at a job now and go, there's some good content in that.
Mm.
Or might not be creeps in a little bit now.
I think anyone that says
who does the social media and the YouTube stuff and they don't say that, I personally think they're not being truthful because they've now got another outlet.
It's a different world, isn't it?
But then again,
why not? If there's a market for it and you guys can, you know, earn a second income, whatever it might be, that's going to alleviate the toll on your body, why not?
Yeah, yeah. Especially, you know, yours is a proper physical job.
I suppose I get to a job sometimes and I'm so focused on dealing with the customer and the horse and stuff like that, I sometimes forget. I'm like, I should have filmed that. Yeah. Oh, well, it's too late because I've only got one go at it.
There's
plenty more horses.
But you get four goes there, yeah?
Yeah, but it's all done then.
Yeah. So moving forward, that's where you're at. What about you, Russell? Moving forward with... I suppose you're going to predominantly push the podcast side of stuff.
Pretty much. I mean, I'm lucky, touch wood, there's some wood here. The decorating business is pretty stable. So that's kind of on tick over, really. As I said, I've sort of with the demographics of industry and being high-end domestic now, I'm not really trying to expand. I'm kind of happy with where that is. The podcast, on the other hand, is like, it's my baby. It's the new thing. So
You're excited about it.
I am. I enjoy doing it. Genuinely, it's a passion project. It's entirely self-funded. Yeah. Hopefully there's some growth. And at this point, all I want to do is bring as many eyes to it as possible, purely because it sounds cheesy, but because it might help.
Yeah.
So somebody might hear something in one of those conversations that will resonate and maybe make a difference. And hopefully... you know, then they might pick up the phone or they might speak to somebody rather than doing something more severe. I'm just trying to raise awareness that the podcast is there. It's not going to be for everyone. Not everyone's going to like it.
Yeah.
But there's a whole range of different guests and different topics. So, you know, people can dip in and pick, oh, that sounds like it might be a bit of me, or that's resonating to something that's going on in my life now.
Like you said, if one person takes something away from one of your podcasts...
that's enough, yeah.
You're happy with that.
Yeah, yeah. If you save one person's life, that's it. That's worth the hours and hours of doing it.
You know, after volunteering with Samaritans now for over a year, I've witnessed that firsthand, and it's an incredible feeling to put the phone down and think... I've made a big difference there, you know. And as a Samaritan, you're not there giving advice, you just listen. That's all you do.
Yeah.
One of the key points that somebody made to me was that it's not just about, because the catchphrase of the podcast is "Let's talk." It's not just about getting
that
people.
British Telecom at one point. What was there?
No idea, mate. If it was, that's subliminal.
What was there? What was
probably
there?
Probably it could be, couldn't it?
Good,
it would make
was
sense.
It's good to talk. Was that British Telecom?
Sorry, Russell, I won't have them copyrighted.
I get these things pop in my head and I'm like, I've got to say pretty much similar to what Al does, but not quite as bad.
Carry
on.
So that's mine. so with it being "Let's talk," but it's also, you've got to have somebody there to listen.
Mm,
do you know what I mean? It's no good talking if there's nobody listening. So I think as people, as men, one of the things we can all take on board is to try and listen, you know, to people around them. Kind of thing. So, sky's the limit, really, Mark. I have no idea where it's going or what it's going to do.
And that's nice that you're literally just going...
winging it.
Yeah, whatever.
There's no pressure.
Yeah, exactly. You said it's not... you've invested a few quid into it.
Yeah.
You're not precious about, I want this, this and this. A lot of people have that goal, but you're going... I'm just going to run with it.
Don't get me wrong. I'm celebrating the goals as they come. Mm. You know,
I think always do.
In total, we've got, I don't know, about overall platforms about 4,000 downloads now, which is tiny in terms of podcasting. But you know, when I got 1,000 downloads, that was a goal.
Yeah.
You know, it's not one that I set, but it's like
all of them,
absolutely.
Mate,
because,
well, you got to start somewhere. Like, everyone starts somewhere.
But I'm enjoying it, and the messages that I'm getting off the back of it are telling me that it's hitting the spot for the people that are listening.
Yeah.
So, and it's, you know, those podcasts are going to be out there for eternity, so they can be referenced, you know, by anyone at any time. So,
what we always do at the end of the podcast is do like a final thought, whether you want to plug your business, whether you plug your socials or whatever. Mm. But you sort of rounded yours up to a degree with that, you know, a bit of advice for anyone. Whether it be decorating or, you know, if you want to plug your Yeah, your podcast, and I'll come to you in a minute.
Yeah, sure. So I guess, obviously, as the podcast is so new, we could do with all the support that we can get. So go and check out the social channels. The podcast is on everything. So we've got an account on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. The podcast is published.
Do you put it on like Spotify and Apple? What's Apple's one?
It's Apple Podcasts.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, which weirdly is virtually the same amount. We're getting the same amount of downloads through Apple as Spotify, which surprised me because I thought Spotify was the big one.
Yeah, I just go straight to Spotify now. So, I don't really do it.
See, again, like, I'm a
Do you know what put me off Apple? When fucking you too.
You're not the only person that I've heard that.
I go in my car. I've still got it. I can't get rid of it. So I go in my car, plug it in. Fucking Bono
comes up.
Honestly, I do not know how to get rid of it. I think they've done it in two albums or something.
Do you know what, though? One of the things I've enjoyed doing is this is something so different. Like, I mean, I'm sat here. What am I doing here? Yeah. You know, I still get major imposter syndrome. But it's nice to have something that's actually making me uncomfortable because I've been so comfortable for 20 years.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
So it's completely new, but I mean, getting to know things like audio equipment, video equipment, RSS feeds.
Don't get him started. You'll have a geek out with that.
Hopefully, one day I'll be sat in a studio like this. but yeah, like learning things about RSS feeds. So we publish on Spotify and then it goes everywhere. So it's on Spotify, it's on Apple, it's on Audible, it's on
YouTube,
it's on Amazon Music. Good. Pretty much anywhere you can stream a podcast, you'll find it. Just search for the Talking Trek.
Yeah, Jack will add all the bits and bobs in the
bottom. Fantastic. So yeah, that's about it really.
What about you, Sam? Anything to either, I don't think you really need to plug your socials. people coming into the trade probably. Any advice for anyone?
Ask a question. I know I've sort of put down silly questions, but there's, you know, if you ask a silly question, you might be a fool for 5 minutes, but if you don't ask the question, you're a fool forever, right?
Someone else will always want to know that question.
Yeah, so you know, and horses and getting into farriery and stuff like that is, you know, I'm learning stuff I've never seen every day. You know, and anybody that says I know everything about horses is an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, and I've come across stuff I've never seen before. So it's, you know, just trying to get as much information as I can and just try and tell people what we actually do and what we're there for. Yeah, number one is the welfare of the animal, and it's, you know, if you want to get into it, get into it.
Is it a growing trade? Is it getting bigger?
It's a stable one. No, it's sort of, we float about sort of 3,000 farrows a year, obviously. It's got quite busy at some point, and then they sort of cut the apprenticeship down and stuff like that.
Who does that, the government side of it?
No, it's called the Welsh Wool Company of Farrows. They sort of govern the whole thing, and then the government put their sort of money behind it to keep the apprenticeship going.
But then they brought it down a bit. It's just capping it.
Yeah, so say if you have, you know, say, I don't know, 1,000 houses, and there's like 1,000 plumbers and decorators, there's not enough work to go around. So so there's probably a bit less horses than there used to be,
right?
Purely because it is getting expensive to keep. So it's, yeah, like, but I think educating people internationally as well, you know, because there is no regulations.
So you say the UK is the top tier?
Yeah, the UK is like the premium of premium. So you have like the High Gold Polo, the Queen's Cup and all that kind of stuff. That's like the pinnacle of polo cups. There are big polo places and stuff like that, and racing in Dubai and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which is big races and cups and tournaments and stuff, but the UK is obviously the pinnacle of it.
Right. No, okay, we'll wrap it up there then. Now Nate's been educated on horse mining.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, enjoyed having you in, boys.
Yeah, it's been good.
Thanks, Russell, for coming in. Thanks, Sam, for coming in. And expanding the trade legends demographic
criteria
to farriers. Yeah. And, cheers, boys. Perfect. Thanks for coming on. Enjoyed it. No worries.